This edition of the Monocle Arts Review was first broadcast on the 3rd of April 2015 on Monocle 24.
Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Gillian DeBias, and today I'm joined by our regular connoisseur of films, Karen Krasenovich, to discuss the re-release of Ridley Scott's 1982 sci-fi classic Blade Runner, the 7th Fast and Furious film, and a new generational comedy, While We're Young. That's all to come here on the Arts Review on Monocle 24. Welcome to the show, Karen. Now we're going to begin with Blade Runner, because here in the UK, the British Film Institute are re-releasing the final cut, or at least one of the final cuts of Ridley Scott's hit sci-fi thriller in over 80 cinemas across the UK as part of their Sci-Fi Days of Fear and Wonder series. Now, this spotlight is a great opportunity for us to revisit this cult classic.
Well, any excuse, really, that will do. It's the kind of film that when you hear about it, people say Blade Runner, you automatically think, oh, that's a good film, and oh, that's a cult. And you remember bits of it, you know, like Rutger Hauer's speech at the end of the film, or
the neon.
You know, the neon, the wetness, the dampness, the fact that it's, you know, everybody's taking pills, and it's amazing. And also the Vangelis soundtrack, which is very evocative as well. So the question is, okay, this film is from 1982. This, which is considered the final cut, which is 116 minutes, is from 1992, re-released. This is, okay, there's 7 versions of this film.
Phenomenal.
And this one, you may ask, okay, what is different about this one than the others? Well, there's 3 major changes. The voiceovers were removed. So Deckard, Harrison Ford did this read through.
Now that's interesting. Because apparently the reason was that the financiers were very influenced by Apocalypse Now and Martin Sheen's sort of narration. And so I think against Ridley Scott's wishes, decided to have the Harrison Ford character do this narration throughout that was very kind of Apocalypse Now-esque, which Ridley Scott, I gather, was never happy about.
I've read a lot of different things about the narration, and it's, some people say, oh, it was intended to be like that, or no, he wanted it, no, he didn't want it, and Harrison Ford was supposed to do it, and then this other guy was supposed to do it. So there's all sorts of different theories about that, but it always has been, it's considered cheap filmmaking. A narration through a film is considered something that you did in post, that you didn't really think ahead.
And, almost,
you
know, film school.
Exactly right. So, you know, Ridley Scott is not your film school nerd. Well, nerd. He's not a goof off. The voiceovers are removed. And so automatically you think, well, is the story going to make sense? Can it be told visually? The answer is yes. It is very visual. I didn't even miss the voiceover. I was sitting there thinking, I thought there was a volcano. Okay, no. And then there's also the dream sequence of a unicorn. Mm-hmm. Which you can see where that would get trimmed or lifted out, because it's pretty trippy.
But again, talking about being trippy, because I think the first screenings of this film originally in 1982 did not go down well at all. So the completion guarantors or the financiers took the film back. And as always in Hollywood, they gave it a happy ending.
Yes.
And so this unicorn, obscure, rather perhaps depressing ending was changed to something that was frolicking in the future, perhaps.
It feels a lot more like a traditional story, this original version. Now, I didn't see it when the final cut came out originally. There are times when you go through phases of thinking, oh, I need to see 2001 again. No, I don't. I need to see Blade Runner. Yes, you do now. It's a good excuse to go and see it. But the happy ending actually works, and it feels much more film noir. Mm. So I would say go and see it. And seeing it on the big screen makes all the difference, because it's been remastered. And the fact that they found this guide, it's very interesting. They found in 1989, a 70mm print of Blade Runner. Somebody else was searching for a copy of Gypsy in the Todd A.O. vaults, which is fascinating.
And that's how they found some of this lost.
Exactly. So it's wonderful, even if you think you've seen it enough.
You've mentioned that it is perhaps worth going and seeing it on a big screen when you have this opportunity, because the cinematography is probably one of the most memorable in our recent years.
Yes.
And it is that very dark, rain-drenched landscape that in a way is just so hopeless but quite heady.
Well, any city dweller will recognize this. Walking home at night, going through an alley, it's wet. You think, what's Blade Runner? I'm living in Blade Runner. It's also incredible for the overall production design because it is a fusion of Eastern and Westerns come together. And it's got a gothic appeal with an interior of decay and rot and of things going wrong and of people still trying to find their way out. And also there's, you know, advertisements for, you know, going to another planet, going to another world. And that sounds very familiar with today. So maybe it's not so far off year-wise.
All right. Well, that is Blade Runner, a version of the Final Cut, which is out in cinemas in the UK today, just for one day. But of course, you can always download and buy the various different renditions of the film on all platforms around the world. Now, moving right along, let's check in with the latest Fast and Furious movie. This is the seventh in the franchise, called Furious 7, and it marks the final performance of the late Paul Walker, who had a starring role as Brian in all seven of the films. Before we talk about the latest installment, let's have a quick listen.
Who did this? Remember Earnshaw? This is his big bad brother. He's a special forces assassin. They created a monster.
And that was a clip from Furious 7. Now, Karen, perhaps you can bring us up to speed with the plot so far.
Take a big breath. Yes. Okay. Well, it does pick up a bit after the end of Fast and Furious 6, but actually it picks up strands of the story that were after some of the adventures that Paul Walker and Vin Diesel had done. Anyway, basically, it is a revenge story. That's what's going to happen. But if you're going to go and see Fast and Furious 7 for the story, then maybe we need to talk, because this is not really about a story. Fast and Furious 7 is about a group of actors playing characters that we love, we've seen over and over and over again. Some have died and come back to life, and some have been added. So they've got new people involved, and also just exciting cars, stunts, and even some pretty good dialogue. You'd be surprised.
Now, this kind of franchise, as they're calling it, is kind of a bit of a cheesy romp. But why do you think they've been so successful?
Well, cars, sexy girls, adventure. Nobody wears a tuxedo, mostly. Well, there is a little bit of dressing up. So it's sort of like James Bond, only with more muscularity, I would say. There's a group dynamic. And these are people from the street. They don't mind if they have a little fun, make a joke. They carry a lot of guns, actually, and a lot of other weapons, but they're doing good. Basically, it's the humor and the camaraderie between men, typically. I mean, there is actually a fight between two very able-bodied women here, but it is mainly a testosterone fantasy, and why not?
I mean, I was reading something where it says that the movie's insane macho posturing has evolved into something endearing instead of embarrassing.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I don't know if you have brothers, but if you've grown up with brothers, this is basically sitting in with your brothers having a good time. They're talking, they're giving each other a hard time, you know, they're driving the cars really fast, they're wrecking their cars, they're blowing things up, they're having moments talking about family. There's a lot of talk about family in Fast and Furious 7. It's like, that's the most important thing. They're friends or family. Family, that's all we got. And I'm looking at Vin Diesel and I'm thinking, you're really not a good-looking guy. But there's a magnetic quality about him. He's calm. He's steadfast. He doesn't, you know, particularly when they go to a race wars, and they invented it. You're surrounded by women with terrific bodies that are not wearing any clothes, basically. And he only has eyes for his wife. But don't tell her that she's his wife, because she has amnesia. So really, it's a soap opera. It's a soap opera with muscle cars.
But again, something to see on the big screen. They were talking about the eye-popping sequences being like choreographed.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's stealing a lot from really terrific films. It stole something from the A-Team. The A-Team sent a tank into midair. They send about seven cars into midair in parachutes. I don't want to ruin it for you, but the less you see about Fast and Furious, the more you're going to enjoy it. So I'll try not to say too much more, but they do steal some great bits and amp them up from other movies.
And of course, followers of the series. It's going to be quite poignant, the ending, because of course the actor, Paul Walker, did die in a car crash.
Yes, so this was,
in effect, his last film. Well, you can see Furious 7, which is out in cinemas and rolling out across the globe. And we're going to end on another light note. While We're Young is the latest comedy from Noah Baumbach, starring Ben Stiller, Naomi Watts, Amanda Seyfried and Adam Driver. It tells a story of a husband and wife who try to relive their youth by befriending another much younger couple. Let's have a quick listen of a snippet of the film now.
Why do you suddenly want to hang out with a couple of 25-year-olds?
We were just 25. I mean, we weren't, but, you know.
We're the boring couple with a baby. What have you guys been doing?
We met this interesting couple.
You came!
He's a young documentarian, and she makes ice cream.
How old are they?
25, 26.
26, 27.
They're children.
Yeah, 9 years ago, they couldn't vote.
I love his shoes. I have some wingtips here somewhere. I stopped wearing them when I got shin splints.
What kind of class is this again?
Hip-hop.
And true gangsters don't speak.
There's something about being around them that energizes you.
You have arthritis in your knee.
Arthritis? Arthritis?
Yes, I usually just say it once.
Well, Karen, we're listening to the film clip and you are laughing out loud. You like this film.
Yes, I saw it in a screen with not too many people. I was the only one that was laughing really, really loud. So maybe they were people who were in their 20s. It's possible. They're calling this the hipster baiting comedy. With hipster baiting meaning we're going to make fun of hipsters. And it needs to be done, really.
It does seem very irreverent and tongue-in-cheek in at a time when hipsters take themselves so very seriously.
Oh, but they have to. They invented beards. Bless them. Now, this is actually set in an area called Bushwick in Brooklyn. And I was reading that this is basically a love story to this area where it's just full of basically, one person put it, young, white, and clandestinely wealthy are hanging out there. And okay, we've got Ben Stiller and Naomi Watts as a married couple. Living a pretty good life. Now, he's trying to finish his documentary, which is this overblown, ridiculous, pretentious opus that encompasses economics and politics. He basically doesn't know when to stop. So it's like 8 hours long, literally 8 hours long. And he's talking, he gives a lecture, and Adam Driver comes up to him as Jamie and says, oh, you know, I love your movies. And it's like, my movies aren't available. How do you see them? So, well, not to give away too much, but they end up being almost seduced by this couple who everything they have is like from the 70s and 80s. So they watch VHS, they listen to vinyl, they read books, they do crazy things.
Typewriters, I hear, in their water tower.
A lot of typewriters actually up on, and I thought, they're on the wall. That means they're not using them. They're using them as fetish things. And it turns out that this couple is not what they seem. But instead of, I mean, granted, the hipsters do get the Mickey taken out of them very, very heavily. But so do, you know, quote unquote, our couple who don't have children, decided not to have children.
40-somethings.
40-somethings. And Josh is, as you heard in the clip, he's mortified that he's got arthritis in his knees. He thinks, you know, my life is, I'm too young for this to happen. And Naomi Watts is kind of, you know what, maybe I want a baby. And she takes up hip hop with Darby. Now, that's another thing. The women are actually much more embracing. The men are getting along, but they're also kind of eyeing each other a little. Whereas Darby and Cornelia, when's the last time you heard the name Cornelia? It's been a long time. Get along okay. But I love the fact that one of them is a would-be filmmaker who gets his film made. I mean, that's a spoiler, excuse me. And Darby, who makes ice cream. Didn't you dream of making ice cream when you
so
were...
Now.
Yeah,
so now. So now.
Exactly.
But I was reading that the 40-somethings' sort of passion for this younger couple and living their dream life. It's not really a film about the quest for eternal youth, but more coming to terms with growing older.
That's exactly right. They don't want to be these people. They couldn't be these people anyway. But they want to remember the freshness of what these people, what the younger people are actually embracing. That newness, the fact that everything's exciting. And they're basically trying, you know, I read a review of this where I thought it was very cynical. Everybody's trying to stay relevant. Okay, that's one thing. But on the other side, they're trying to stay in love with their lives. And that's really what everybody tries to do. And that's why this is such a funny, well-observed film, beautifully paced. Charles Grodin appears as Cornelia's father. If you want to see a film, no matter how old you are or how young you are, I think that this is one of Noah Baumbach's best films.
Well, While We're Young is currently rolling out in cinemas around the world, and that brings us to the end of today's show. Karen Krasanovich, as always, thank you so much for joining us in studio for a lively film chat. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Gillian DeBias. My producer was Holly Fisher, and the show was researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time next Monday for Monocle's top tips in the world of the arts. For now, it's goodbye from me. Do have a lovely weekend, and thanks for listening.